Get ready to be inspired by the great things happening in rural education. The Rural Scoop will bring you new ideas and innovative solutions. We'll dive into education issues and we'll highlight what's working in your rural communities. You'll hear from a variety of educators, administrators, professionals, and others who will provide relevant and engaging content in each episode. And now, serving up the scoop, here's your host, Dr. Melissa Seydorf.
Well, it is my pleasure to be able to spend some time today with another member of the Arizona Rural Schools Association Executive Board, and that is our president-elect, Dr. Jamie Festa-Daigle. And she has been involved with ARSA for a number of years, and I'll let her speak more about that. But Jamie and I have had the opportunity to work together in a lot of different venues, not just the Rural Schools Association, but we've had opportunities with other organizations as well that I hope we'll get a chance to talk about. So Jamie, welcome, and I'm so glad that you're able to spend some time with me today.
Hello, Melissa, and hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
So tell everyone a little bit about where you're located right now and what the role that you currently occupy is in your district.
Sure. So I have been in Lake Havasu City since 2001. I grew up in the Valley, and my husband is from Lake Havasu, and I thought I would move here and it would be like spring break every single day and like a vacation. And then I moved here and I realized that most of the year it's very, very quiet, although that's changed in the last few years. But it is a place where everybody knows everybody, even though we've gotten above or close to 50,000 residents. I just was at the high school. And the nurse there, her mom was my child's babysitter, and she knows my kids, and that's, you just know everybody. And so I've been here for 20 years. I taught at the high school for a decade. And so I know lots and lots of now grown-ups in the community. But then I went on and I was the assistant principal at the high school. And then I went on and was the HR director and oversaw technology and really focused on recruitment and retention of staff. And then most recently, I now serve as the director of student achievement. And so I really oversee all of our curriculum and instruction programs. And that's been really, really joyful and challenging post-COVID, and really navigating how we best support teachers and students, and how we bring people who maybe didn't go to school to be teachers into being teachers pretty quickly. So that's been what I've been doing the last few years in Lake Havasu.
So, you know, what's interesting about Havasu is that, you know, you hear about how many people are there and how busy it gets, and you think, well, that's not a rural community. Talk a little bit about your rurality. Yep. As a district, because you are a rural district.
Havasu is really interesting because it's grown so much and it continues to grow. So all of the big cities in Mojave County, Kingman, Havasu, Bullhead, we're all an hour away from each other. So there's one I think what really makes a lot of us unique is there's one district, and Bullhead is a Union High School and Elementary School district, but it's one. So there's just that one entity, and there's nothing close by. There's not really even small towns close by. And we have grown so fast, and a lot of our population is retired. And then we see a lot of second homeowners. We have lots of Californians that have second homes and maybe now have their only home, but they typically are retirees. And so the younger, the middle class community is actually pretty small, the people who support the community day in and day out. Havasu is very intentional. We've seen like the graying of rural communities. And they were really intentional, our Partnership for Economic Development and our chamber, for making investments to try to attract people to the community, to make it a location where people could work remotely. And that's really helped us sustain. I don't know if you remember, there was a book a while back, When the Boomers Bail, and just thinking about what happens to these communities. So we've been really intentional. It was a group of community members who raised money and got ASU to put a small campus here. It was totally raised by community members. There's about 150 students, which is a lot for where it's been for the past 10 years. But that was like community involvement and our community saying, like, we want to make sure that we survive and that we're forward focused.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really amazing. So I guess I'll take that a step further, because you're talking about you touched on some of the things that a lot of our rural communities here in Arizona have as concerns or challenges. They're whether it's barriers around access of broadband, or you mentioned not having the population that's younger, which are going to be your families, right? Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your particular concerns with your rural district in your area?
So probably our school's biggest concern and the community's concern is a lack of affordable housing. When I moved here in 2001, we bought our house for a fraction of what we would have paid in Phoenix. And so it was okay that I made a fraction of what I would have made. We're now much more expensive than the metropolitan area. There is really a lack of affordable housing for families. And so what we typically see is poverty that's really focused on young people. So in the community, you might not really see it as a community of poverty, but for the first time ever, all of our schools qualify for Title I, whereas before, four of our six elementary schools did, and now every single one. And so we really do see poverty impacts young people more than it impacts anybody and any of the community. Lack of early education, lack of daycare, all of those things that are really focused on supporting young people. And then because young people makes up a relatively small part of the population, the community's not really focused on that. They're very interested in, you know, hot topics are like building a new pickleball court. And, you know, those things really, there's a lot of support for that versus how do we invest in community after school care or parks for children? But that's really some of the issues that we deal with that I think throughout all of those Mojave County communities we see. Just a lot of transitory students. Mm-hmm. You know, we're right on the border with California. So we see students all the time coming back and forth from California. It's actually how my husband got here. Mom kicked him out, and he came to live with his dad, who'd moved to the lake. And so we see a lot of families in transition.
So talk to me about how that impacts the ability that you have to recruit and retain teachers, especially being right on the border of California.
Yeah, so that's really what has driven me for the past 10 years. I think people in rural communities, what we see as a teacher shortage or a lack of people wanting to remain in the profession, we've seen that for a very long time. I remember, I was pregnant. So this had to be 2004. So I was a pretty young woman. And for some reason, at the time, the HR director sent me a teacher to go to a recruiting fair at Scottsdale Community College. And I saw lines of teachers at the Mesas and Scottsdales and Paradise Valley. And not a soul stopped by to talk to me. I saw that when we'd go to recruiting fairs in Ohio and New York. And so really recruiting is so difficult. And now mixed that with, do I really want to live at this place where really there's not all the amenities of a big city, but now it's expensive as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have relied heavily on growing our own. We developed our own teacher induction program, and there's been great parts about it. We've seen people who they're in the community, they're doing the work. Many of them have been paraprofessionals in our schools. I've hired retired police officers, my CrossFit coach, and HVAC guy, and maintenance guy. So we've seen lots of progress, but that's a lot of work on the district. It has really moved us into having to be a teacher prep program on top of teaching children. And that is a lot of work, and that is very expensive. But that is really what we've targeted our Title II dollars for, mm-hmm. is that piece. And then we have had success hiring international teachers. But again, they're only here for a few years. Right. But I think that goes, I just had a teacher. We hired him his sophomore year of college. So again, not a certified teacher. We really work to develop this teacher and support this teacher. We have a 3-year induction program. I just heard that he got a job up the river in Bullhead. They pay more, and their cost of living is just a little bit less. And so we see that happen frequently. They'll go across the river or they'll go into Nevada. It is something that we really have to deal with in any of the cities or the communities that, you know, border other states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not just teachers, but drivers or paraprofessionals or leadership.
Yes.
All of it.
All of it. We've had leaders, you know, if I go to Needles, California, it's a 40-minute drive. I can keep my house here. I can make much, much more than here. So really I think the biggest piece is connecting with the community, teaching in the community. Living in the community where you work is something really special. And so we have to focus on that and what makes it special.
Mm. So one of the things that we're starting to do this upcoming year is really highlight those things that are happening in our rural communities across the state, and doing that through the Rural Schools Association. What do you see as the primary goals of ARSA in this upcoming year to help elevate rural voice and rural concerns and issues?
One of the things that I really appreciated about ARSA is networking and knowing that there are people who understand your role, can help you with your role, think about schools in the same way you do, and just really growing that network, that they might be down the river from you, but they also might be on the other side of the state. And so that working together to solve problems, I think is really, really important. It's the thing that I've learned most, is just working with other people to make myself better. And so, you know, whether we're looking in the realm of leadership and how we develop leaders in our systems, if it is how we deal with legislation, how we are dealing with different mandates, that network, I think, is the most important piece of ARSA.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. Well said. One of the things that ARSA is really predicated on is making sure that we're providing support. And so in doing that, we are working as an executive board to ensure that those things are happening. What do you envision your role as the president-elect and then the role of the board as a whole in advancing those goals to provide support to our rural communities?
I think it's really important that we listen and that we also act as conduits. You know, I think of all of the information that comes out from AD, from auditors, from all of the different places. And so how do we help leaders who wear a whole lot of hats? How do we help distill that information and get that to them? And so I know that in some counties, they have strong county school soups that also do that work. But, you know, there's lots of different organizations that do it. But I think with a rural context and then the ability to connect everyone is really, really important to really support everybody moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you and I are also both involved with is the Northern Arizona University's Rural Resource Center, which yes. is that one-stop shop that you're talking about where you can get toolkits or articles or those kinds of hopefully practically based resources for them that they can use in their daily work. What kinds of collaborations or initiatives or programs beyond that, since we're both working on both of those things, would you like to see ARSA step into? What if you could say, okay, this is something that I want to make sure that ARSA's membership is has available to them as a program or an initiative? What would that be?
So being that I sit in an instruction space, a lot of times I know really at the superintendent level, and really at that director level, we talk a lot about policy. We talk about process. We talk about the things that we have to do. And something that I'm always struck with is how are we really making sure that we're talking about quality teaching and learning in small schools, especially when the person who's the superintendent is the principal and people serve so many roles. And so a thing that I want to be laser focused because I have to remind myself, I can get lost in ensuring that I am compliant with state testing regulations and reporting on my school report cards. I can, that is a full-time job doing all of those things. How do I keep my eye on the ball, which is teaching and learning? Mm. And that to me has to be, the mission is how are all of those things, we take care of them, but how are we making sure that rural students have access to the best instruction possible and they're prepared for whatever their next steps take, especially being that rural schools are like the economic driver of their community. And right. I think that is so important that we serve our communities. And we do that by teaching students. So that is always something that I have questions about and I want to make sure that our focus is on.
And providing support so that they're able then to take those same conversations back to their schools and their yes. districts and have
yes. them. And I know we have to be creative in how we're using teachers, in how we're getting teachers, how we're delivering instruction, and how are we doing all those things at the same time that our students are getting the very best instruction, and how can we learn from each other to do that?
Yep. So as you know, we're in the middle of a legislative session here in Arizona, and it's been an interesting one. There's been a lot of bills that have been introduced, and some are seeing action and some are not, but there's still a lot of things in play here. What are your top priorities as a rural educator right now in this session regarding rural education? And how would you then advise people, or how do you plan to advocate for them?
I don't know about other places, but our community, we have really seen where we've moved into this like hyper political space where we're really focused on partisan talking points. And so this is not a legislative priority, but maybe a priority for ARSA, is really ensuring that we are welcoming and having legislators in our schools. And I know that we talk to legislators, but what does it really look like when legislators are in the classroom, in the communities that they serve? And so that to me is actually a top priority that I think can help shift the narrative some, because the talking points that are out there aren't, I don't know that they're actually the day-to-day things that we are working through. So, you know, to me, you know, it's always going to go to the aggregate expenditure limit, but I would like that to be solved so mm-hmm. we can stop talking about that. Mm-hmm. I think that that's been problematic. I know there was work last session around dual enrollment. I think that's very important for rurals. Again, I don't think this is up for serious consideration, although I do see there's potential for some Group B rates around kindergarten. But the funding of full day kindergarten is actually it's the most important thing. And then being considered about early education. I assume across rural Arizona, we are lacking early childhood centers. And so how are we reimagining our public schools to support that? I think we're really, well, who else is better positioned than us to do that? But that takes money, and how can we work with different organizations to make that happen?
Mm-hmm. What does advocacy look like in Havasu?
One of our legislators is a graduate of Lake Havasu High School. Another legislator's child went to Lake Havasu High School. So advocacy looks like a lot of times like a text. You know, they're members of our community. I don't know that education is always like the top priority. It is certainly something that is being talked about in different areas, different lunch groups, different dinner groups, but I don't know that it's always what's really happening in school. I feel like it's sometimes perceptions of what's heard on the news. And so we've worked really hard to get legislators to come to us. As far as at the city level, we really work hand in hand with our city to focus on serving young people. We just went down with the Arizona Chamber of Commerce. They had an advocacy day focused, you know, on a piece of workforce readiness is early education. And so really that working with chambers, city, all of the different, the hospital, all those different organizations that are in the community to advocate for education has been the most powerful thing I've seen.
So what you're referring to then, I mean, what that leads me to think about is that community asset mapping. So knowing what the assets are, who and what gifts or talents or knowledge that they bring to the conversation. How did you build that? Because that doesn't happen all of a sudden. That's something that takes time to build. What did that look like?
It's actually a really fun thing that I'm working on right now. We're doing Portrait of a Graduate. Mm-hmm. We're really trying to define what do we want like Havasu High School students to look like at graduation? What are the skills, knowledge, and competencies that they should have? Because we know that that needs to happen starting in kindergarten. So can we distill that and say, this is a portrait of a graduate? There are 50 people that are serving on this committee. It's everyone from our mayor to our police chief to our fire chief and everybody in between, teachers, parents, students. You know, that is something that I think speaks to people care about education in our community. in all communities. And it is working with them. It is knowing that, you know, we have a severe shortage for police and fire. And so we built out a police and fire program in our high schools. We really work in tandem on so many different things. And a lot of it comes down to, you know, I've been here now for a long time. I've taught their kids, the people that I do a lot of the work. I've known them for my whole adult life. We've known each other. And that has just expanded how we do the work together. So when we did ask for an override, like, those people were willing to come to support that together. And so it's all relationships. I'm a Rotarian with lots of those people. And so it's an investment in the community that I've made, and then they make it back. So it really runs both ways.
What would you advise people to do? I mean, if they were looking to start that kind of work, because that's very impressive to have the community come together and collaborate like that. 50 people in a room talking about what's best for students is incredible.
For three two-hour meetings over the course of a month, willing. Nobody said no. It's crazy.
Wow. Well, how would you get that started? If I was a community with a rural school that didn't have that in place, what would you advise me to do?
Again, on the front end, it's trust. There's invested time up front. But the other is then going to people who you know have relationships. So I shoulder tapped a friend. We were looking for someone from industry that from like construction trades. I didn't really know anybody. And so then she contacted them. So we really use like our web of, we know the community together. And so to me, that is always like, you surround yourself with people who share that same vision.
Right.
And they also believe in collaboration and relationships. And then we really did the work as a team. And then I go back to like, everybody knows everybody. And so the head of the Partnership for Economic Development is married to someone who works for me. And so I just think that connectedness in rural really plays it, but it does. It requires all of us who are leaders here. Like, we have to be active members of the community. Right. I go to city council meetings. I go to whatever, community 5K. Like, we're active members in the community. So people see that as like, yes, that's what we as community members do.
So in terms of rural education across the state, what do you see as the future of education here in Arizona in a year, 5 years, 10 years? What does that look like? Or what is aspirationally, what is it you hope it looks like?
So I think all of education in Arizona in some way is going to change. Really, there's the power of choice is real and intense right now. Whether we feel that it's a positive or not, but it is going to force school districts and charters to really ask themselves, like, how am I best serving students and how am I best serving the community to do that? And so, again, rural's been doing this for a long time and doing it well. It's partnerships with community colleges. How are we partnering with each other? How are we sharing staff? What are we doing so that we are lean, but we're also really meeting the needs of students? And how can we have those conversations at even a greater level than just a school district? How can we share resources at the county level or, you know, through a few communities is really sharing and networking between us. That I think is really important. And then I think, the importance of career and technical education and college and career readiness. And that does not mean that art and all of those important things, those foundational skills go away. But I think it's really asking ourselves, like, what do we really need students to know and be able to do to be successful, mm-hmm. and aligning what we're doing to that. And we can either work on that or we can work on incrementally increasing test scores, which is fine, but I don't think that changes a community.
Mm, well said. I don't think so either. It's more, children are more than a test score.
Right. Children are more than a test score. And so how do we really make that happen for our communities?
Mm-hmm. So we've done some changes with the way that we are approaching advocacy work and our business partners and the work of the association in general. Talk a little bit about what excites you about where we're going next as an association.
So I do think having Diane come in as that doing that advocacy work is really instrumental. I think she's filled a space that was lacking. And again, that connection makes us all better. I also think as we approach business partners, I just see it as more rural LEAs are going to be interested in joining. And so what does it really look like when we really do have, you know, a united rural group where everybody's at the table? I know when I came to ARSA probably a decade ago, because I had a teacher who won Teacher of the Year, you know, it was a pretty small group and everybody knew everybody and had known everybody for a very long time. And that's going to be changing as all of us, including myself, age out. And so how are we making sure that we've built this network that serves people who are coming into rural spaces for the first time, and doing that work that it really becomes their home and their hub to go back and serve their community?
Mm. I like that, Jamie. That's great. So one of the things that I like to ask people is, what do you think the term rural advantage means? What does that mean to you?
So I think about it from my personal perspective. My kids grew up in a community where I knew all of their teachers. I taught their teachers' kids. They were friends. I spent my career in a community where, as the assistant principal, I took the neighbor kids to school, and that just was okay because they were the neighbor kids, and I couldn't imagine it any other way. And again, the people who I see every day really care about my children in the same way I care about their children. And it's a community. And I don't think you always get that. And again, I think the other important piece for us is not all, but many people do choose to stay here, especially now. And even if they don't, they still have ties here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really beautiful to have that impact. And so to me, it's such an advantage, even though my children didn't have access to geometry in middle school or nine foreign languages. They had really caring adults that were active members in their lives. And I think that's important to keep. And so how do we make sure that people come into the field in rural communities and are able to stay here? Because that is my worry. We see our biggest teacher churn in those mm-hmm. teachers in years 1 through 3 or 1 through 5. And so how do we owe it to our kids now to help retain teachers that they're here and they're caring for them throughout their whole lives and careers.
Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you want to highlight, either about your school district or about the Arizona Rural Schools Association?
I just, again, ARSA has been one of the most fun things that I fell into. The first time I went to the ARSA conference, again, we really had no idea who anybody was or anything. And never did I imagine that it would really help drive my work and drive who I am as a leader. And it's really helped develop leaders around me. Everyone from the teacher of the year that I went with, who's now a school principal, to another teacher of the year who is a teacher leader at her site. Like it really is. And it's such an interesting way, like just drives leadership because of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I will say that the annual conference for ARSA this year is actually going to be at the beginning of October, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Flagstaff. And so for those of you that have not experienced that conference, it really is going to be an amazing time to get together with people that you don't have to explain what rural means. You don't spend the first 5 minutes of a conversation talking about what rural is.
I don't think I've missed one since I went to my first one. It really is like the one thing that I put on my calendar already that I'm like, we need to book the hotel. It's just like the given that I do every year, and it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. And I'm looking forward to spending some quality time with our leadership at that conference, as well as all of the different chances that we have to connect with them during the year. So thanks, Jamie.
Thank you. It was good talking to you. Goodbye, all.
Thank you so much for listening to The Rural Scoop. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, or even leave us a comment. And be sure to follow on Twitter at Dr. Sadorf. That's DR_SADORF, so that you never miss a new release. You can also check out previous episodes of The Scoop wherever you get your podcasts. Production support for The Rural Scoop is provided by Chattanooga Podcast Studios. Find out more at ChattanoogaPodcastStudios.com. See you next time for more great discussions about rural education. Proud member of the Podnuga Network.